Hello, and welcome back to our next episode of SAF Podcast. It's been quite a while, and we're glad to be back continuing on our series of Season 5, where, on the onset, we're looking at natural theology, but in this season, we are focusing on the moral argument. And Jacob, it's good to have you back on the podcast. And why don't you go ahead and give us a recap of what we learned in the previous one?
Yeah, and it's good to have you back on the podcast as well. So we are both sticking with the same routine of us both taking the series forward. So in the last episode, as those of you listened in would recall, we've been covering different parts of the moral argument, and we've been coming one step at a time. So we looked at the distinction between values and duties, and what we mean by moral duties, and what is required for moral duties to be present. We were slowly stepping into, and I think we almost draw it pretty clearly why we say God must exist for there to be moral duties. And we also looked at one very key distinction on this whole idea about God and morality. We're not saying that belief in God is necessary for you to understand objective morality or for you to be a moral person. What we're saying is that God must exist. If there is no God, if there is no superior lawgiver, then there can be no objective moral values and duties that we can hold on to, point towards. So the distinction is very clear. We're not talking about belief in God, that is the basis for objective morality. We're talking about God himself, his very existence, whether I believe or not, it is his very existence that is needed for the basis for objective moral values and duties.
When we hear that, you know, these atheist philosophers are there and they do not want to ground morality in God. So what do they do when they do this? What are they exactly wanting to portray by stating these things?
So when atheist philosophers come clear up to the fact that they don't want to base the foundation of morality in God, what they would do is they would try and make sense of the explanation, fit the explanation within a very naturalistic framework. So that would mean there is nothing supernatural, and if you exclude anything that is supernatural, you by definition also exclude God. But the issue is, and hopefully as we progress forward, we'll be able to see that together, the issue is that it lacks a sense of a justified starting or stopping point. Like, if you were to go back in explaining something, there should be a specific reason as to why you're going back forward. If you're just arbitrarily going back forward, based on randomness or just because you felt like going back forward, then we could ask the question, well, why aren't you going even further? Why are you stopping at so-and-so place?
Yes.
Right? We get to a very specific starting point because there's a very good reason for it. Or there is some sort of condition that confines that or restricts that you can't go further. If it's purely arbitrary, then you could go even further. And similarly for a stopping point also. If it's purely arbitrary, it's because of your likes or dislike, you could potentially go even further. So when they try to make sense of morality in a naturalistic framework, that satisfactory starting point or stopping point is seriously missing.
So, but can't we say that, you know, whatever helps human beings flourish and survive is good, and then make that the basis of creating this moral argument?
Yeah, right. It has been attempted, and it is a very strong case that is put forward that we look at human flourishing as the basis to build the moral framework. So Walter Sinnott Armstrong and even Sam Harris in his book, I think The Moral Landscape, they both present the idea that whatever is conducive, whatever is positive towards, whatever is providing the grounds for enabling human survival and flourishing should be taken as moral. And whatever is opposing to human surviving and human flourishing should be taken as immoral. And therefore, they would understand the actions that give way to, that would provide the way for survival, that would provide the way for human flourishing, to be the metric, to be the rule or the ruler or the demarcation on what is moral and immoral. Now, the questions that come forward is that, If atheism is true, like, as we've covered in the previous episodes, right? The question still remains, okay, why is me inflicting harm on someone Why is that having a sense of moral dimension? Or why is it wrong for me to hurt another member of the species? So the question comes again. So because, again, they are answering this within the ATC framework. So we are asking them, okay, you're saying I shouldn't hurt someone. So why is it that it's wrong? And they would say, well, it's just is. It's that's the way it is. It is objectively wrong that you shouldn't hurt another person. Now, you and I would say that, well, it is wrong, right? We would say to Senator Armstrong, we would say to Sam Harris that it is wrong. We both agree that it is wrong. But if you ask them, why is it wrong? They won't have a very clear exploration apart from the human flourishing one, which we shall look at right now. But for theist, because we have the very clear foundation that it is because of intrinsic human value and dignity that is intrinsic to us because God created us in his image and likeness. That is the reason why we say you shouldn't harm or you shouldn't inflict pain on others. But then if there is no atheism, if there is no superior authority to give that moral duty, then the question remains, why is it wrong? Why is it my duty to not do it? Why is it my duty to only do good things? All of that's steep come in flourishing in. And then again, I mentioned about this arbitrariness, this randomness to why you start here or why you stop there. Even in Sam Harris' work, The Moral Landscape, he also put, like I said, he also put forward the idea that, you know, whatever supports human flourishing is good and whatever doesn't support is bad. Even his whole point has been objected by one of the very well-known internet, I won't say an internet atheist because he's not someone who deals with academia, but someone who's very popular on the internet. Alex O'Connor of the Cosmic Skeptic channel. So he was on the Unbelievable show when Justin Riley was there and he was interacting with Frank Turek. And he also pointed that out. The issue was, the question again comes back to Sam Harris. Why is it that human flourishing and human survival is good? What is your reason to take that as the moral starting point? So they would say, well, it is good. It is just good that way. You know, if you harm someone, it is not conducive to human survival because human survival is good and we want human survival. It just is good. But then the question comes again, why is that human survival is good? Why not some other species survival? So they're assuming a moral framework that should be overruling or everyone to begin building their own framework from scratch. So there again, you see that they have a moral assumption that human survival is good. So the question again comes back, why is human survival good? So that's what I said. They go back far back in line on trying to explain, you know, objective morality. And they reach a point and say, okay, we're going to assume that human survival is good and that human survival is moral and that we should strive for flourishing, so on and so forth. So the question is, why are you stopping there? Why can't you go further? Why can't we ask why is it good and so on and so forth? And they would just throw their hands and say, well, it just is, without having a satisfactory explanation as to why that's the stopping point. And also the other challenge with it is that they are drawing purely on the basis of the evolutionary mechanism, right? So they are taking a combined view of how evolution has been driving survival and survival of the fittest, so we must survive. So the thought would be similar along the lines that you look at the animal kingdom around us, you look at everything around us, and everything is thriving towards survival, so survival must be the key agenda. So it is banking a lot on the evolutionary, the Darwinian evolution understanding. But then the also issue that comes up is that if you rewind the clock of evolution, you would end up, because it is randomness and natural selections, randomness taking shape, if you rewind the clock of evolution, you would end up with a different set of species, a different set of humans or non-humans, something of that sort, who won't have this sense of moral understanding. But you would have completely different species, or you may not even have humans there.
Right.
So then the whole understanding of morality again is limited to us humans, and therefore it becomes subjective in that regard, without being out there on something that is beyond human existence.
So hearing that, I think that clears my previous question pretty much. So I'll just go to my next question, which is, can it be said that morality exists in some form like numbers? Because numbers, they're not created by humans, or mathematical truths which are derived using numbers are objectively true, right? So could something similar be said over here in case of morality?
Right, and that is actually a good point to think about. because as you said, you know, we didn't create numbers, we discovered numbers, and then the mathematical equations that we form with numbers are objectively true. So if moral values are also the same nature, then moral truths that we form using those values would also be in some sense objectively true, just like numbers and mathematical truths are. So when we talk about numbers existing or the existence of number, there are disputed views on what that is. So some would take Plato's view and they would call numbers as Platonic entities. And that would mean, to simply put, it just means that it just exists in some form. It just exists in an abstract form. So we didn't create it, we just discovered it. That's there. But they exist in some specific form. Not as ideas or anything, but in some abstract form. So that is a highly disputed field. But let's grant that. Okay, let's not go into the dispute of Platonic numbers and all of that. But let's assume that moral values also exist in this Platonic form. Like they exist somewhere in reality, in some sense. Like floating around or, you know, however you want to visualize it. And so this view would be called as atheistic moral Platonism. So you are trying to explain morality within the atheistic framework using the idea about Platonic entities. So you would call them atheistic moral Platonism. So the first objection is that when we say a moral value exists out there, like when we say that, and this is a good one that Dr. William Lane Craig used in his book, Reasonable Faith. He says that when we say justice exists out there, like justice exists as a Platonic entity, well, what does it mean for justice to just exist, right? So when we talk about the word just, we say, you know, that guy is a very just guy, which means he has the attribute of just in his nature. He has the attribute of justice being lived out in his life. So whenever we talk about justice and all of this, they are also very relational and personal attributes. So we don't just throw the word justice out there. We always talk about it in relation to the way a person exemplifies it. So first question is, what does it mean for justice to exist? What does it mean for love to exist in some sort of Platonic entity? And again, how can they exist if there is no relational aspect to it? Because that's how we always understand these moral values. Like, if there is no human, then what does it mean for justice to exist? Because it seems very clearly rooted in persons and personal relationships and personal interactions. So in some sense, justice and love seems to be intertwined with humans, that you can't have justice without humans, or you can't have, again, the first thing is it's confusing, it's unclear. What does it mean to say that justice exists out there? What do you mean by that? So that's the first thing. Because these moral values appear to be properties of people and not just simply out there. So that's the first commonsensical thing that would come to mind. The second thing is the point that we talked about moral duty. So with atheistic moral Platonism, you may get moral values. You may be able to say, in some sense, you may be able to advance it and say, well, there is a sense of, there is justice out there, there is love out there, there is hope out there, or all of these values out there. But then how do you get to the point of moral duties?
Yeah.
Right? How do you get to the point to say that, okay, all humans must now live their life in congruence with those values out there? Why should I prefer to live my life with justice, forgiveness, selflessness, and love that are abstract entities just floating around that are not impacting my life? Why should I pick those instead of picking selfishness and greed and hatred or envy or anything of that sort? Why, from where do we grab the idea of a duty that I should follow those and not them? So the duty aspect is still missing. And that to me seems to be the biggest strength of the moral argument, in that even if you concoct up in some way the idea of moral values, the question still comes back, but why should I bother? Why should I pursue that set of values? And who are you to tell me that I should pursue that set of values? Normally in our human interactions also, when there's a question of who are you to tell me that I should do that, we often refer it to some sort of an authority. It's maybe a human authority or a human institution. We always refer to some sort of authority to bring that bindingness upon us, that oughtness. I ought to do it because authority. But when we come to the moral argument, it's just humans. You and I, we are the only people on the face of the earth. We are the only species that can engage with this. So the question is there not another human institution? Because that is what we are developing, we are creating. But the question is there something beyond mm-hmm. humans that can enforce that authority, that can enforce that duty? And that's what we looked at in the previous episode. So this is the second objection. If you have justice, love, and all existing out there, there is no reason. You may get moral values, but there is no reason to say that you have moral duty to pursue them and live out them in your life. And then the third thing is that, so you have these abstract entities out there as part of reality. And again, this answer is coming under the frame of atheistic moral Platonism. So you have these entities abstractly out there. They don't cause, they don't bring about any effect on nature. Just like numbers don't have any effect, right? The number 2 doesn't create or act upon anything. We use them in our mathematical equations, but the number 2 doesn't do anything because it is abstract. So they would also, the atheists who present this view also would take these value systems and all of that to be abstract in that same sense, that they don't do anything, that they don't bring some sort of effect on anything. They're just there, disconnected. So you have a world, a natural world, a natural reality, where you have these justice, love, and selfishness all floating around in their abstract forms. But as it also turns out, through the unguided, naturalistic, accidental process of evolution, a species evolved by pure chance that is able to grasp and make sense of this natural order, this natural moral order that is out there. So it seems highly improbable that a species was able to accidentally and through chance evolve and come to a form that is able to now grasp onto these moral values and make them applicable in life. So that improbability is also a very intriguing point. And it's along the similar lines of how does these abstract things go hand in hand, let's say, our moral understanding of the world, that we also see in the question of numbers. For example, the argument from mathematics, right? You have numbers and the number 2, 10, again, they don't do anything on planet Earth. They don't make rocks fall. They don't make ships fly. But you're able to use those numbers to form equations that predict the natural world. In some sense, the numbers are going hand in hand with the physical world. You can use numbers to predict, you know, how to take a jet takeoff, how to make a rocket, how to get Chandrayaan land on moon as our nation did. So you're using numbers to achieve these physical feats. You're seeing numbers go hand in hand with the physical world. And similarly, we're seeing the same thing. We have these moral values and moral duties, these moral concepts that are going hand in hand with the human world, a species that is able to make sense of this. Which is why William Soule, as we mentioned in the first episode, William Soule's argument was, you see the natural world and the moral world go hand in hand in congruence because they are the product of a creator and a lawgiver. And so his idea was, you look at them both and you see them go hand in hand. Why? Because there is one person behind it, a creator and a lawgiver, a single entity, a single being that brought the natural world and the moral world into effect. Or when I say moral world, not that he created moral values, but that he brought them hand in hand in a way that we interact with both the natural world and the moral world like hand in glove. So that would be the point. That again, the point, what stands out to me is that no matter what you do, even if you get moral values, it's very difficult for you to bring to a conclusive point how you can get moral duties. Like I think in the later episode, we may cover what is known as brute facts if we get if it is needed, where they say, oh, it's just a fact. It needs no explanation. Something is good. It is just good. It needs no explanation. It is necessarily good. Fine. Okay, you get moral values. But still, why should I live my life in accordance with that? So that seems to me the strongest point of the moral argument. Yeah.
Right, makes sense. So I think with that, we've come to the close of this episode. And before closing, let me just give you a recap of what the moral argument is. Premise 1 states that if God doesn't exist, then objective moral values and duties do not exist. Premise 2 states that objective moral values and duties do exist. Hence, premise 3 states that God does exist. And with that, we come to the close of this episode. And we'll see you in the next one. Till then, stay safe and take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into SAF Podcast, where faith and reason unite to equip seekers like you. If any of today's conversation struck a chord, share the knowledge to help others on their journey. Join our community on Facebook, X, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and Podchaser. Your feedback fuels our journey. Dive deeper with our free ebook at ebook.saftapologetics.com. For more about our team and our passion, visit saftapologetics.com. SAFT equips believers to defend their faith anytime, anywhere.